I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is a man of courage, and not just because he was an Army lieutenant. A West Point graduate and Arabic translator, he had a tremendous career ahead of him as a soldier and leader. And then, in March of 2009, he decided to risk it all and came out on the Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC. 1 month later, the Army began discharge proceedings against him. Lieutenant Dan Choi, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Great to be with you, man.
Well, how are you doing? It's been quite a year in your life, hasn't it?
It has. There's been a lot going on. About 9 months since coming out to my parents, and this new gay activist is born. You know, I came out to my parents in January, and it was because I fell in love the very first time after coming back home from Iraq. I couldn't lie about that anymore, so I made sure that they knew, and then my next stop was telling Rachel Maddow. So I'd make sure to tell them before I told her.
Well, that's before you come out, right? You fall in love, you come back from Iraq, but you knew you were gay how long ago?
Gosh, I've been praying about it since maybe third or fourth grade. I mean, I've known since I would say 10 years old. And so I was 10 years old. I wouldn't even know what the words meant, but I knew that that's what I was, and I felt, for whatever reason, because my dad's a Southern Baptist minister, or because we went to church revivals all the time, I just felt I had to pray it away. And I tried for so many years, and it just never went away. I'd gone into the military, you know, not to be more straight or to be more gay or to be more Korean or to be more anything, but to serve my country, to be part of something bigger. You know, in a lot of ways, yeah, it was running away from certain parts of my identity, but the overwhelming reason was I wanted to be part of a bigger team.
Even though you've done this in the climate of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Sure, I knew that, but that wasn't important to me. And
you thought you could be fine with that and just keep it hidden.
Well, see, my dad always told me, you are never treated as a full adult, as a man or a woman, in Korean society at least, where he comes from, unless you've served something greater than yourself. And for him, it meant the military. He was in the military, he was in the Korean Army during the Vietnam War. And for a lot of other people, it just means serving in your government or doing something greater than yourself.
But service. Mm-hmm.
Service is the key. And so that was at the forefront of my mind when I graduated high school. I needed to be a part of a bigger team that served a purpose that was greater than myself. So I joined the Army with that in mind. That Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that didn't really mean too much to me. Of course, being a strict Southern Baptist boy, I wanted nothing to do with any kind of sexual relations before marriage anyway. That was easy for me because I was, you know, never going to get married to a girl. I was gay, so it was just like, whatever, I'm never going to have sex with a girl. Not a big deal.
Good, I can't have sex before I'm married? I think I'll just put marriage off.
Yeah.
So then I won't have to have that.
But, you know, I do notice that there's a lot of people that join the military that are running away from these issues of masculinity. So you find a lot of people that are in the closet that'll join professions like the military or the clergy or other kinds of service like the police, fire department, things like that, because they're compensating or they're running away and they don't want to deal with that. And you find so many veterans, and I'm meeting so many of them, that are just coming out of the closet and wanting to tell somebody. But also, they're gay and they want to announce that they were military. You know, and they just want to put their two identities together. And it's so difficult, particularly because of this rule, don't ask, don't tell.
Well, and how do you ever put those two identities together until it does change? Do you think it will change?
Of course it will change. I think America is founded on these ideas of equal justice for all citizens. And so it's just a matter of time before we realize how wrong we are to discount certain people, particularly people that will raise their right hand to protect our country, but to come back home and not be protected by its laws equally. I think it's just insane. So it's a matter of time and a matter of consciousness when Americans will wake up and realize there's this huge discrimination going on. What does our country stand for? And war has sort of tested us in that way. And now we're seeing soldiers coming back from war with a whole slew of issues, PTSD, relationship issues, depression, and just finding a job. job. Coming back into society, and especially among those veterans, you see the gay and lesbian soldiers who have served their country, and they're not allowed to tell even a psychiatrist or a chaplain or their best friend who they've been through thick and thin together, because don't ask, don't tell. So I think it's a big travesty.
What do you think? Do you know people in the military then, in the Army, when you were in the Army, that are gay, that are not going to come out like you did?
Right. They just tell
What's
their best
effect?
Friend, and they want to do it because their best friend deserves to know who their boyfriend, or for a lesbian service member, their girlfriend is. And so when you talk about issues like unit cohesion, or because of forced intimacy, all of this discipline and professionalism will just sink, and the greatest military in the world and the soldiers that are so strong, they're just going to go so limp and so weak, and they're going to go run around with their hair on fire because they know a gay person. Oh my God. And I just look at them and I say, why would you insult our soldiers to assume that there's going to be a huge distraction or difference in the professionalism? It's a slap in the face to our straight soldiers. You look at Israel, or Great Britain, or Canada, Australia, or any of the modern militaries in the world, they have no problem with professional soldiers who are also willing to tell the truth about who they are.
Who are gay.
Right, who are gay. And then also their straight soldiers, their straight service members, have no problem dealing with that. And the most hilarious thing about this is we're serving right next to some of these militaries in operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, and there's no detriment either to their military or our combined effort. So it just really makes no sense. And they look at our country and they say, how can you be leading the charge? And especially
taking the losses.
Right. I'm actually talking to Iraqi people still, you know, from my deployment, and talk about losses when they see our country, who's going into their country teaching them about democracy and equality and protecting all people regardless of their religious sect or their identity or minority status, and saying equal protection for all. One of the lessons that we taught them was you never subordinate your military to a religious faction or a political faction and let it run rampant all over the country, saying that one group should have rights at the expense of another group, or one group should be discriminated against. And here we are in our own country, in America, discharging people who not only have served overseas, but have taught some of these principles of equality, and I'm not equal in all 50 states. I can't get married. I can't serve my country without having to lie. I can't, you know, be protected equally under employment hiring practices, or have the same hate crimes protections still to this day. And so they look at us, and that's the biggest loss. It's really the loss of our moral standing, because Iraqi people will look at us like, remember, Lieutenant Choi, you were teaching us about this. It is so sad to see that you are also discriminated against, you know, in the same way that either Shia or Sunni people were, and you were talking about how American policy is against that kind of discrimination.
What do you say to them? Democracy is an ongoing process.
Right. Well, I have to let them know that from the very core of me, I might get hurt. I might lose a lot of my benefits. And they know that. They watch YouTube. They watch CNN. And they see that I am going to potentially lose my home loan or veterans hospital benefits. And they look and say, oh, my God, how sad for you, and you're still my friend. And when they found out, particularly, that I was going to lose my hospital benefits if, you know, as I'm 50% disabled from like combat time, it's just, they look at that. And one of my Iraqi doctor friends, he calls and he says, you know, if your country that sent you to my country will not give you medical treatment, you remember how you told us about these things, and remember the times that we had. You are still my friend. I know you're gay, and it doesn't matter because you're still my brother. And if that happens to you, then you can come to my hospital any day. Any day. Come to South Baghdad and get treatment, because it would be my honor to pay you back for your sacrifices. So I hope America can learn from that one Iraqi doctor. Essentially, we should learn because it's the lessons that we were teaching him.
I think America's learning from you right now. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Lieutenant Dan Choi, the West Point graduate and Arabic translator who was fired by the Army after he came out, or discharged, I guess they say. You can find him at Lieutenant Dan Choi. That's LTDANCHOI.com. Dan, you just talked about this, so I've got to ask you, what do you mean 50% disabled from serving in Iraq?
Well, we have, with the Veterans Hospitals and Veterans Affairs, they give you a disability rating. And I've came back from Iraq with a lot of respiratory issues. We were in an area known as the Triangle of Death. There was a lot of munitions, a lot of things that were exploded all the time. We did a lot of reconstruction work also, and so we'd go into these bombed out buildings, and there's a lot of asbestos, a lot of issues with their construction. And so a lot of people had told me you probably have either somewhere between asthma and cancer. So they just didn't know when I came back, and I was going through all these tests. The cough just wouldn't go away for about 4 or 5 months. So they said I have really severe respiratory illnesses, and they're still looking into it. But I've had some fractures. I've broken my limbs a couple times, not only during training, but just on missions, and it was part of the job.
You go, you risk your life or your health, and then you can't be gay, and then they discharge you once you say I'm gay. I bet the person you told, your commanding officer, your superior, wished you would not say what you said.
Well, everybody in the military knows somebody who's gay in the military.
Right.
Everybody has a brother or a cousin or anybody, and they realize how stupid the rule is. And for the most part, the soldiers are the ones that are most pissed off about this. They're looking at us saying, well, why are we losing our soldier? You know, we have no problem with it. And so they said they look beyond the loss and they look beyond some of the pain that I was going through. And they said, you need to keep speaking up because finally sometime when more people like you come out and tell the truth about who you are, they'll not only see that this law is stupid, but they'll see that people like you who speak up are bringing credit to the Army and to the military in the eyes of millions of gay and lesbian people throughout America who do need to support the military. And one thing that I've seen also is that there's a lot of animosity sometimes between our communities. And this discrimination is really the cause of it. Whenever we go to war, and every commander knows this, whenever we go to war, we need the support of all of our country, not just certain parts of our country. And when I raised my right hand to serve, I didn't say, I'm just going to protect the gay people in America, or you and you, the people with red hair, or the people who are Korean American, I'll protect them. Or the people in Tennessee, or Maine, or California, or Iowa, maybe I'll just protect them. Because, I'll just protect those states that have equality in marriage. Maybe that's what I'll do. No, you say, I will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, all of them, gay and straight. And so when you look at it, you have to have the support of the entire American population. You can't just say, I want to protect these certain people. And so when we come back, why shouldn't we also be protected in every facet of our society? And we need to bridge all of those gaps. And the more people come out and the more people speak out against lying and enforced lying in the military, that is, don't ask, don't tell, the better our country is going to be as a whole.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. My guest is Lieutenant Dan Choi, who came out as a gay person in 2009 and actually came out on the Rachel Maddow show and then was discharged by the Army. It just doesn't make any sense, does it? And yet, here you are becoming this poster child for the Don't Ask, Don't Tell revision.
And I never imagined that this is where I would be, 9 months from coming out of the closet to my parents.
Yeah, You didn't. Yeah, I mean,
didn't imagine at all.
What were you thinking? No.
That's a common question. What were you thinking?
Was that your dad's voice?
Right. No, I don't want to imitate him because I would need subtitles even on this radio show. You'd have to have another translator.
Well, he's first generation.
But he is. He moved
you're
here from
first
Korea.
You're actually first generation,
so
right.
I'm the first, American born.
Yes, first generation, right.
Although I consider him more American than most Americans because he decided to come here. He had to give up so much. And, my message to all the other immigrants out there, as you know, that there's a lot of people, particularly new Americans, that have some hang-ups with gay people in America, but it's the same
that they bring from their countries,
right? And it's you, sometimes you'll look at the Korean American population, you'll see sometimes it's more conservative than Korea is, because they have so much of this discrimination also against them. They don't want that same kind of discrimination against their kids, but you have to realize that it's not about whether somebody has an easy life or more comfortable life. Certainly activism is not comfortable or easy. It's tiring and it's exhausting. And if you take part in it, you have to be ready for a lot of slings of all sorts and all different directions.
And but you have to be a soldier to it in some sense.
This is like combat. In a lot of ways.
I don't know about that.
But I would say that
it's definitely work.
When you look at the things that have to be done, when you look at discrimination that's existing and just the prospect of getting rid of it, you look past all the pain and you look past how difficult it is and you just soldier on.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Lieutenant Dan Choi, the West Point graduate and Arabic translator, who was discharged by the Army after he came out. You can find him at LieutenantDanChoi.com. That's LTDANCHOI.com. Well, what's it been like to become this spokesperson or poster child for the gay rights movement now? I mean, maybe this is your second true calling. How do you see it?
I actually see it in terms of my military training. There has been no difference in the leadership training and its effect on me now just because I've been kicked out of the military.
Uh-huh.
You know, I did not cease to be a West Point graduate just because I was kicked out, for being honest. In fact, in a lot of ways, I've become more of a West Point graduate because I stayed true to the honor code. And when you talk about these values and these very important responsibilities that we have as military officers, as in never letting a soldier be isolated or alone, particularly in combat. You never let somebody go off and be on their own. And when you see Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and its most horrible effects, you look at these soldiers who have nobody else that they can talk to, or this perception that there's nobody else out there. Our message to them is, we learned all those lessons of commanders. We learned all those lessons of combat. And our message is, you are not alone. You are not isolated. There are so many of us. You are honorable. What you are doing is so good. And never look down or be ashamed of yourselves, because we're here with you. We've gone through it. And keep putting one foot in front of the other. And that's really our responsibility. That has not changed because I've become a gay activist or a gay spokesperson. In fact, it's become even strengthened. Those values and those lessons and that training has become and has, you know, continued to become even more relevant every day. And it is a little bit strange for somebody who's in the military to become, you know, an activist for either civil rights or for gay rights. You hardly see some of that. And I think a lot of times we get accustomed in the military to being just like everyone else, not making, you know, ripples in the lake.
Conforming.
Conforming and hiding in a lot of ways. So it's difficult for military people to step out and do these things because they have this innate desire to just live I want to have a peaceful life.
How do you think your company sees you now? The men you've served with.
A lot of them have actually seen me on the street here in New York, and people who have come up to me have certainly been supportive. We've had a good amount of people in the unit who've contacted and said, I want to meet your boyfriend. I can't believe that you are lying about him and calling him your girlfriend, or if you're referring to him as Martha when his name was actually Matthew.
Is that what you were doing? Martha? Matthew became Martha. Well, this is juicy.
Right. It's not that she's transgender or anything.
No, and no.
It was just, I had to lie.
It's a beard.
About him, right? And so it was a lot of deception. It takes a lot of energy. That's why I chose Martha, because if the event came where I accidentally said Matthew, then I wanted to cover up and say, I meant Martha. You know, so I had to create this persona, because when you're in love, and I've, for the first time in my life at age 27, I was in love, I didn't want to you know, keep it to myself. I wanted to get advice. I want to hold on to this love. You know, I wanted to ask people, what does it mean when you have red roses or chocolates or white roses or a red teddy bear or a chocolate cake? You know, what does all this mean? And my soldiers were, you know, they were giving me advice on how to accept presents or give presents and go on dates and what to order. And this was so new to me. You know, I was their leader in a lot of ways in combat, but they would come here and they would be holding my hand through a lot of this. This is all altogether a different kind of war zone. But and there's no technical manual or standard operating procedure for this kind of operation, right? So it was really good that they were able to help me. But they looked back and then now they find out that I'm gay and that it was a boyfriend, not a girlfriend. They were just like, I can't believe we're talking to you about red underwear and this, and it was for a man. You know, so there was a lot of...
They had some mild feeling of betrayal, right?
But they were fascinated. They wanted to know. They just wanted to know what I was like in my regular life. We've been to combat together. They deserve to know. It strengthens our unit because now they know that somebody else is out there who loves me no matter what. And I'm going to be stronger. I'm going to be a better leader. I'm going to be a better soldier. I'm going to be a better family member, a better son, a better brother.
Does your family feel that way? How's your family take this?
Well, they're developing and they're going through this.
It takes time.
My sister, she was very supportive from the very beginning. I told her pretty early on. My brother, who I always thought was the most homophobic person in the world, he's become very accepting and very supportive. Of course, all of my cousins have been very helpful. My parents is a different question, you know, different story. My dad's a Southern Baptist minister. His employment might be at danger if he comes out and says, you know, that it's okay. Yeah, and so there's a lot of difficulty there. My mom is a baby nurse at the hospital. Yeah, she loves babies, as in she loves having Korean grandbabies. You know, that's what she really means by that. And so she wanted more than anything for me to have Korean kids. And when I told my mom, I was so sad. I didn't know what to expect. And I said, you know, will you love me no matter what? And she says, sure, what's wrong? And I said, I'm never going to marry a Korean girl. I'm not attracted to Korean girls. She said, oh, no, you're not married a white girl. She was so afraid that I would marry a white girl or somebody who wasn't Korean. And that was her number one fear, was just this, you know, you're not going to have pure 100% Korean babies. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, that was a bigger fear for her than me even being gay.
Is your boyfriend Korean?
No, he's actually not. But we're not going to make mixed babies, though. Don't worry about it,
Marilyn. Is he Caucasian? What race is he? Let's hear this.
He's Caucasian, yeah. Uh-huh. I met him in New York City.
You're not going to make mixed race babies? No, you're physiologically not.
We're a little bit impaired there. So I guess, you know, my mom doesn't have that to worry about. So.
Well, it's an ongoing process for parents. It takes sometimes years for them to change.
And I understand, right?
It's hard.
When I told her, you know, she had that reaction, that was her after 28 seconds, whereas I had 28 years to get over it. And so I have to understand, you know, that they are going through shock, and for them there is a fear.
They have to come out. I mean, this is what happens, is that then the parents have to go through this process where they have to get to a point where they've grown enough about it that they tell their friends,
right,
yes, I have a gay son, which is very scary for them.
And for them, it's different because their friends are telling them, did you see him in the paper? Have you seen him heard him on the radio?
You came out on the Rachel Maddow show.
Right. She wasn't telling Rachel Maddow. Rachel Maddow was basically telling them. So.
What made you make that choice? I'm just curious.
Well, after I told my parents, I realized that I could do anything now. You know, so many people say that my parents are the last people that I want to tell. And I realize that it's because there's this fear of doing, they don't know what kind of judgment is going to occur. But it's so liberating to be able to come to terms with those people in your life. They're so important to you. And after that, I said, now I am free, even though they don't accept it, even though they've had a difficult time. Just my saying that to them made me feel so empowered to meet other people who have done the same thing. Maybe it wasn't empowered. Maybe it was this necessity to find other people and, you know, tell them how difficult it is, because there is a little bit of difficulty. But it was also empowering because after telling them, I could then join these groups and lead these groups and form these groups and tell my story and allow other people to know that it's also okay. And so after I told them, I met these other combat veterans, these West Point graduates, and we shared our love stories. We shared, you know, I met this Iraq and Vietnam veteran and this World War II veteran and all these different veterans who are married to their lovers in California, or they had these lifelong relationships, and it was amazing. The people that I was so afraid to even talk to or email or friend on Facebook. You know, now I know that I'm not alone. For real, I'm not alone. And we said, why should we hide about this? And we got to talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And when we started realizing how many other people there were that were suffering through this, as we started our group and people heard about it and they emailed me, or they found me on Facebook, and they wanted to relay that, you know, they're straight, but they have a soldier that they know is lesbian and wasn't eating for a week, and then they told her about this group, and she really found hope. Or this one soldier who's in Afghanistan who was going to drive his Humvee off of a cliff or just didn't want to go on. And he said, because you guys came out, I'm going to continue and I'm going to finish this deployment and I want to meet with you guys. And there's so much problems. They were not able to share those with anybody. Like, they know that there's gay groups out there, but that's not for them. You know, they don't understand how they can exist.
And that's what you've done with Nights Out. It's KNIGHTS.
OUT.
Out. Yeah. So soldiers who are out.
That's
or who
right.
want to come out.
Mm-hmm. And essentially, when you realize that there are other people out there that are going through this with you, it's a world of relief. People think, okay, well, we don't really do a lot of lobbying per se, or we don't do a lot of protests. I mean, we're not doing these grand gestures. We're not setting ourselves on fire or anything. But our very existing and our refusing to lie is an act of protest against lying, against the policy of lying. So in one way, we're like, wow, that's a great thing. But then the other time, we're just like, why should it be such a great thing? We're just refusing to lie, you know. So people have said we're starting a revolution. I said, well, the revolution to serve your country, the revolution to tell the truth, the revolution to know that there are other people in your community. Quite a revolution.
Yeah, hey, wow, Didn't the Founding Fathers think of this before? Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Melon, for what you do. I know that there's people who listen to this, and maybe every time that you go on the air, there's somebody who doesn't know if there's somebody else out there, or they haven't heard these stories. And I really appreciate that you're also sending the message to those people mm-hmm. and telling them that they're not alone, and they can reach out, and they don't need to be ashamed.
Mm-hmm. You can find Dan at LieutenantDanChoi.com, LTDANCHOI. LieutenantDanChoi.com. He's been my guest here on Out in the Bay. Thanks again, Dan.
Thank you.
Out in the Bay is a weekly show about gay life in San Francisco and beyond. I'm Marilyn Pittman. You can hear our show at KALW.org and 91.7 FM Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific. And then we archive our shows for on-demand listening and podcasts at OutInTheBay.com. Thanks to WY Enterprises for our website. They help you manage your life and your office. WYEnterprises.com. Hey, write us with your comments or questions. My email is Marilyn@OutInTheBay.com. Eric Jansen's is Eric@OutInTheBay.com. Thank you to the staff and management of KALW and to Paul Ruest at the Argo Network in New York City. Out in the Bay is produced by Eric Jansen and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me.